This is a production of Cornell University.
UA meeting, November 18th, 2009.
All right. How's that? Are we going to change the meeting place? Could we put it on the website? I don't know that the website got changed, but I did send it in two emails, and it is on the agenda.
No, but
you can gap on the meeting to order. Let us begin. Any late additions other than Marty's resolution from the faculty center?
No, it's not from the faculty center. It's just a resolution that I'm bringing to your attention and like to talk about briefly.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anything else? Okay, let's proceed to approving the minutes from our last meeting.
I have a couple of questions, or just suggestions. Under not present, Beth McKinney, Asa Craig, and Mike Walsh are listed. And just to make it clear that they are not voting members, I think there should be two categories of not present. Not present voting and not present non-voting, so that people will be clear about what constitutes quorum. And under the charter description number 6 on the third page 4, it says Charlie Walcott said some of the committees are a waste of time. I just didn't know whether, since Charlie's not here, we can't confirm that, but it seems like that's a little strong. But I don't remember that particular quote, but it may be in the list. Just worth checking. In the next line, it says, M. Hatch went over of the committee. I think probably strike the of. And then on page 4, it says under the CJC resolution, third paragraph, there were many continuous conversations and raised voices arguing the point. Our ordinance restored order to the meeting. I suggest we omit those two sentences. I don't think they are pertinent to the discussion. Thanks. That's all the suggestions I have.
Somebody like to move the minutes, please?
By moving with those suggestions, if they're accessible to everybody.
Second by Andrew, moved by Marty. All in favor? You two vote. Okay, passes. Did you vote? Oh. All right, and I have an update from the president on a few resolutions we sent to him. It's addressed to me. I am pleased to acknowledge receipt of the University Assembly resolution expressing support for the Cornell University Climate Action Plan and Resolution 2, a resolution to promote energy efficiency at Cornell by establishing a revolving loan fund for energy efficiency and a small energy project fund. Please inform the UA that I plan to study Resolution 2 in depth and am sharing it with my senior colleagues by copy of this letter. At the conclusion of my review, I will report back with my decision. I thank you for your fellow representatives in the University Assembly for your important work on behalf of the Cornell community. Best regards, David J. Scorton. Anybody have any committee reports they would like to talk about? Marty?
The Sustainability Committee has been meeting, and we had a discussion about a possible resolution at our last meeting, and it was parallel to the Senate resolution, which was tabled concerning drilling. And we have evolved a second version of a improved version of the resolution, but it has not yet been approved by the committee. So you'll hear in the additional items are added to the agenda, you'll see a copy of that, and we'll have a quick discussion of it. Other matters that we discussed are the possibilities of supporting a position about the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences dean considering seriously certain sustainability issues in the process of the search as important. And we also talked a bit about sponsorship of Hendricks and White fellows such as Michael Pollan and Stephen Keller. So that's my report.
Okay, thank you. Anything to check? No? Any other reports? Leon?
The planning committee, I covered the meeting prior to this, in fact, for Randy. And they gave, there were two presentations on Fall Creek Gorge and on the Capitadilla Gorge, recommendations that they will be making regarding those two gorges.
What are the recommendations?
The recommendations, what I can do, that, there's a number of them. So what I can do is I can send an email to all of you regarding what the recommendations are.
Okay.
Basically, they talked about slope stability. They talked about the railing. They talked about long term and short term. They talked about funding for making some of these improvements in the gorges. They talked about where they were saying, like, students like to swim in some portions of the gorge, you know, very dangerous. Should they consider perhaps a place around BD Lake? Should they consider a swimming pool? Should they consider recommending that students go to Helen Newman to swim? So they're looking at a lot of different possibilities like that. So in general, those were some of the things that they have to determine. And of course, with these recommendations of funding considerations, where will the money come from to pay for some of the recommendations that they're looking at?
They don't decide just to shut it off because that's what they're sort of doing. I mean, they've got these signs of don't go on this and follow them up, but that's a major attraction.
Yeah. Well, they mentioned that some parts of the gorge where it's really not stable, where they might have to say, you know, you can't, like, you know, no trespassing, you can't go in here. Because the maintenance year-round can be very costly. But there are other parts where you will be able, excuse me, other than in the wintertime when it's closed, you know, because of the ice and snow. But there is a perimeter around the gorges where you will be able to, the recommendation.
You couldn't walk from downtown to campus.
This is a big issue, and it's been discussed at the CJC, it's been brought to the UA. This, the planning committee is not talking at all about things like that at this point. Mm-hmm. So I think until we get some more information, we should have a long discussion about it.
And just keep in mind that this is the only meeting that I've been to just to cover for him, because he was teaching today. That's why he was not able to go.
Okay. Let's move on to the resolution for committee liaisons. And Andrew, would you like to start the discussion?
Sure. Well, pretty much the exclusion clause currently in our campus charter doesn't allow us to be members of our own committees, which is unlike faculty senate, not by student senate. It's just very inconsistent. And I feel that if we were, you know, we are looking at how we are going to harness these committees, how we are going to make them active. And in order to do that, I think we should put a step would be to actually make us all ex officio members of every committee.
Okay.
In addition, give us the power to fill vacancies on these committees, give us the power to make them active, make us responsible for our own internal operations, which I think, you know, if we want to have a proper place within the campus governance system, it's important that we are keeping these committees active. And they are coming back to us. I know we have liaisons already, but I think for people who are UA members who are dedicated to a certain committee, it's important that they have a vote. It's important that they could be chairs, lead the committee, and then guide the committee back to the student or the university assembly. John, if you have.
I would just add, too, that the ability to fill vacancies in committees is a good way for members to involve themselves with the committees, while also, from the committee side, making them more active and filling those vacancies before what can be a somewhat long process of waiting for the constituencies to fill them. This will help keep the committees active. It will make sure that there are varied voices within those committees. And also, too, as far as the ability of non-voting members to serve as chairs or other positions in the committees, I know with my own experience with the CJC, there has been no one in the committee that has been willing to chair the meetings. And currently, my understanding is that I'm not allowed to chair the committees. I have been asked to as a result of the lack of any interest in the committee members, and I said I would be fine with it, but I was not sure I was allowed to because of the way this is set up in the UA charter. And so this is one of those things that this resolution would address.
Any questions?
You know, I read the resolution, but I wasn't clear about exactly what it meant, but you just explained what it meant, so thank you.
So when you reference that a member of the UA can fill any vacancies on committees and fill the relevant positions to fill the seats, so it would be contingent upon, say, the SA or the CPSA saying, oh no, we found somebody else who would prefer them to fill in that chair.
Yeah, I think this will be further looked at if that ad hoc committee to restructure the charter moves, because I think perhaps down the road there's a need for a member of the UA to handle internal operations and handle the membership of those university assembly committees, because it doesn't make much sense that, you know, the VP of IOPS for the student assembly is staffing university assembly committees. In terms of particular committee structures, I mean, there are certain committees that say two should be staffed from the UA, two from the SA. With those sorts of things, I mean, if it is a UA committee, I think that, yeah, it should be staffed with students until we find the appropriate constituent.
Marty?
Yeah, I guess we're talking just about 2.3 changes. And the construction of that now is a little vague, in the sense that it says a voting member of the UA, and then after the clause, may fill any vacant seats. So because seats is plural, it makes it appear as if one member of the UA could appoint a number of people to fill any number of seats. But what I think you intend is that a single voting member of the UA can fill a vacancy.
Well, also too.
Wait a minute. I think you're if that's the case, then all we have to do is X out any and put A, and X out the S on seat, and say a voting member of the UA with an affirmative majority vote from the UA may fill a vacant seat on the committee until the relevant constituency fills that seat, I guess it should be. And I'm just wondering if we want to say that these committees can be staffed by, you know, if there are five vacant seats, all five could be staffed by UA members. I'm thinking that we want to maybe backtrack a little and say a voting member of the UA. We might want to consider putting a limit on how many UA members can be a part of these committees, because part of the deal behind this is that you need to get other assemblies involved.
Well, that's the whole point, though, because this is only contingent until those seats are filled. And I would say it would be better to have UA members in those seats than to have no one in those seats.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, we have these committees. I don't know which ones you're talking about in particular, but, I mean, there are some that are more important along these lines than others. And, I mean, on the planning committee, I don't know. I guess it would be only standing committees that we're referring to here, because we can't really staff the planning committee. Right? Isn't that right? Ari, I have to look at the Constitution while he's gone, but... I look at the charter, but it seems to me like there's some committees that we really can't staff. We can only appoint a single member to. And so I think it's only our standing committees that we're talking about here. So I think you might want to say in here, a voting member of the UA with a firm majority may fill a vacant seat on one of the UA standing committees, on a UA standing committee.
That is correct. They are standing.
Until the relevant constituency fills that seat. And I guess you could leave it that way, and just because, so if there are two seats, then you could fill two, but we don't have to say any or all seats. It could just be progressive.
So, John and Andrew, is that friendly?
In concept, I think it would be, but my concern would be that, let's say you have a UA member who would want to fill the vacancy, a vacancy on multiple committees, like a vacancy in CJC and a vacancy in, one of the other committees.
It doesn't prevent it, this resolution doesn't prevent that at all.
Can you read the reporting one more time for me?
Oh, sure. A voting member of the UA with an affirmative and a majority vote from the UA may fill a vacant seat on a UA standing committee until the relevant constituency fills that seat, until that seat is filled in some other manner, I guess you should say, because
that just makes it clear that a separate vote has to take place for each time you want to fill the seat.
Right.
Okay.
We should probably move this resolution.
Andrew probably moved the resolution.
Just wanted to raise an unfortunate procedural issue. Since this text is in Article 2, which is titled Membership of the Charter,
do we need
the whole university?
No, it's subject to the university referendum requirement.
That's what I was afraid of.
So I don't know. It might make sense to try to, because the charter does allow for UA members to be staffed to committees. It just requires that those positions have to be explicitly allowed for each committee. It might be better to rework it to modify Article 6 instead of Article 2.
Is Article 6 each committee structure?
I think Article 6 is committees.
Article 6 is procedures.
I'm sorry, I get confused. The committee assemblies.
Article 7.
7 and 8.
And one is doing and one is not, right?
Actually, 7.
Article 8 is the standing committees, which were
7 to 10. So Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't catch that earlier, but that will be an impediment.
Is that the only way we can go?
So are you saying we can't pass it, that in the resolution?
Oh, you can pass it, but it won't take effect until there's a referendum.
I want to ask you about that. I know I brought this up last meeting. Where is it that we talk about amending the charter, that certain things you can do without amending the charter with the referendum? There's
Article 11?
Is it 11? Yeah, okay,
yeah.
Thanks. Changes in the charter, here we go.
Might I suggest, since 2.2 does say, except where specified in this charter, if we simply add that clause, which would originally be 2.3,
mm-hmm.
To Article 7 on committees.
Okay.
Then I feel like that would be appropriate.
Like have it be 7.4?
Have it be 7.4, yes.
And what's 7.4?
This would be 7.4. It would just, instead of including it under the Article of Membership, which
right.
would require the referendum, it would just include it under the Article under the committee, or under the Article of Committees.
Okay.
This would, because the membership article already says except where specified in this charter, we're just putting another place in this charter where it specifies it. So then the resolution was, so we're taking out any amendment to 2.2, and instead of the addition being 2.3, it will be 7.4.
So
that makes sense?
So I can get rid of 2.2 entirely.
Actually,
yeah.
Wait a minute. I want to question you about that. Because Article 11.1 says that the only things that are excluded from an affirmative vote of a majority of the voting members are those procedures specified under authority, membership, and changes in the charter.
Mm-hmm.
This would be under membership,
mm-hmm.
as it was originally put forth. Under Article 2 is membership.
Oh, you wanted it under Article 2. That's right. Okay, thanks. But we want to put this not under membership. We want to put it, that's what you're saying. You
right.
want to put it under committees.
Yeah.
That's great. Good.
So I'm going to get rid of 2.2
yes.
entirely.
Delete that clause. Oh. And then.
And I need the rewording for what you guys wanted it to read.
Okay. Where it said replace any at the end of the first line with A.
Okay, good, yeah. 7.4, you're saying?
And then
mm-hmm.
change seats to
right.
seats. And then change committees to a UA standing committee. That's all that same sentence there.
Capital steps.
Lowercase, I think.
And make committee, and make it committee and not committees, right?
AUA standing committee.
Okay.
On AUA.
How about any would be?
On A.
On AUA standing committee. A.
Any, I think, would be better.
Okay, any or
A? A or any?
A is what we had after we did the proposed change.
Yeah. Oh, okay. We can put any, I suppose. A voting member can fill a vacancy on any UA standing committee.
Okay.
I think any would be fine. That, you're right. That sort of makes it possible for them to do. Heck, you could be on five standing committees. Say if there were five, if they're on.
And then change still seat or back seat.
Right.
Fill that seat.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Voting UA members are non-voting members. Non-voting ex officio.
Right.
Okay.
Well, absorbing that.
All right, so if there's no other questions, I'd like to move it.
A resolution moved by John.
Second
moved by Andrew. Any further discussion? Ready to vote?
Yes.
All in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 in favor. Any opposed? Any abstentions?
Not voting? Did you vote?
Oh, he voted yes.
All right. Passes 13-0-0.
I have a question, point of clarification. Does this resolution go to the president, or is it because it's internal to our operations?
I don't think
it needs to be passed.
No, I don't think. Yep. It needs to go to the president's office.
Right.
Thanks. I want to save this. Right. Pardon me for just a moment. Okay. So, next on our agenda, we have two motions for the faculty appointments to the UH and RBs.
May I move both simultaneously?
I think you may.
I move both simultaneously.
Second.
University Hearing Board and
the Hearing and Review Board. Okay, so that's moved by Marty and seconded by Ellis. Discussion. Would you like me to read them?
No.
No?
We've all read them.
Okay.
Let's vote.
Are we ready to vote?
Yes.
All in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Passes 13-0-0. God, this is going to be a quick meeting. Okay, next on the agenda is for the review committee, charter review committee. We need some additional people because I believe it's the executive committee and a two or three more people participants, if I remember correctly.
I don't think there's a ceiling.
Okay. Anybody interested in helping?
What's the time commitment?
Probably about an hour.
Not
busy too. We're trying to get done, so we'll have a prepared copy at the beginning of the next semester. February timeline, roughly.
I wouldn't think it would be more than an hour, maybe 2 hours a week.
One.
Yeah.
Good.
Hey, I'll
Leon?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a lot. It's going to be hard to get together everybody, yeah?
John,
that's why we've missed the membership.
We didn't list who, though, was coming in addition to it.
It was, yeah, this is recording. I do.
It would be on that website if you go back to the conference.
I think we should wait until you have full membership and exec meeting before we do.
Oh, I guess it's not up yet.
It's not there?
It's not there yet.
Okay. All right, well, let's discuss that for sure in the next executive meeting.
Yeah, since no one made it to the exec meeting, we should really bring that up.
Nobody made the executive meeting. There wasn't an executive meeting.
There was one that I tried to get around yesterday, but
I see.
A couple of people. Ed couldn't make it.
Right.
Charlie couldn't. Charlie didn't show up because he wasn't sure where it was going.
So regarding this topic, what will you determine? You're tabling it to determine the number of members. Is that correct?
I thought it was open to 3 or 4 months participants, but I could be wrong.
The way it was written, the executive committee can staff however okay. whoever and how many more people
All right.
seems appropriate.
Look forward to that then from the next meeting so we can get it going, because we put in a decision time
yeah.
of the beginning of next semester to have some updates.
We have an idea though who all is interested, right?
Well, one of the things to consider is that we might have to meet in January or late December. In other words, that's a time when most people are free. So that's one of the things for anybody who wants to join in to consider. Rod, you'll be around. Charlie will be around. You're going to be around, right?
First half.
Yeah, so maybe after the 15th. Just think about that, because you know it's pretty tight between now and then. There's a lot of exams. I'm not trying to keep you off. I'm just saying that if we can't get a meeting, if you guys all volunteer and we can't get a meeting together, then we're not going to be able to meet.
Right.
I think it's good to get names of people who are interested.
Also, if people are not physically here, we can always do the phone. You can call in and you can still be a part of the meeting.
Well, emailing in makes a lot of sense. To send a draft is something that is done by a smaller group around to everybody who's interested.
Right.
Well, Charlie's not here.
Charlie's not here.
You don't want, okay, so he's not here. So what do you want to do?
One of the theories behind the ad hoc committee was too small, because we've tried harder to do with large groups for as long as I've been around and for several years on the UA. And so the point of the committee, which we should have been discussed this week, which is as small as possible and go through your constituents. So like undergraduates meet and talk about what's important to them, graduates meet and talk about what's important to them, and then bring it back to a small group. For example, if you just raised who would all be interested, almost everyone in this room raised their hand. So that makes it extremely unproductive and inefficient.
Well, I think what happens though, because there's so many committees where there's nobody even on them or nothing, they're inactive. When you do have the opportunity for people to volunteer and participate, I don't see why that should be cut off.
It's not cutting off, it's breaking it down into groups and make it more structured so the chain of communication is more fluid.
I disagree, but there's other opinions in the room as well.
Marty?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I don't think everyone raised their hand. Second of all, we created this small committee more than 3 weeks ago. No one has met. Has come of it. So I don't see why we shouldn't just kick it into gear right now and see who's free at the most valuable time, and then people can start discussing. I mean, let's start moving.
I don't know how many of us around this table have read the charter. I mean, I've read it. I still can't remember what 11 and 7 are. But it takes quite a while to get familiar with it, to know what it is you think you need to do. It strikes me that if the executive committee, and I know Charlie said he'd read the charter, and I think probably other people in the committee have read the executive committee read the charter, they're probably more familiar with it than many of us, although you may have read it thoroughly. Okay. It makes sense for them between now and December 2nd, seems to me, to come up with a plan and a committee size and a sort of structure for a review, whether it be, for example, Andrew, John, and you know whoever else caucus, and come up with their ideas on what is a reasonable structure or revision, and you know whomever else, you know Leon and others, caucus and figure out what his ideas are and submit them, and then whatever committee of a small variety you guys come up with as workable goes about doing something in the next month or two. But I mean, I can imagine we could have lots of meetings, believe me, you know, but I just don't see that those meetings could be productive in producing, in getting together a charter that's getting the revisions that we want.
I'd rather have lots of meetings than no meetings. You haven't had, it's been 3 weeks.
Right? Two.
I haven't gotten either.
Two.
Three. It's been 3 weeks since our last meeting.
18.
Well, 3 weeks since right now, so that
was. I know, what was it? 28.
28.
Yeah. 3 weeks. Good.
Yeah.
I just wanted to echo sentiments similar to Marty's that you don't have to officially be part of this committee and meeting with it to still submit your ideas. Still, you know, I feel it would be good if whoever is interested can be put on the email list or whatever for this committee, and if it would be, and when the committee meets, could be published, so anyone who has an idea they want to just briefly present to the committee can do so, and that anyone is still free to submit your any ideas you have to your representative on the executive board to present to the committee. So the ability to still put your ideas to the committee and have the committee consider a diverse set of ideas is still there.
Well, it didn't specifically mention ad hoc. Aren't under 7.4 that we just passed, aren't we all members of this committee ex officio anyway? Is that what we just passed? We're all ex officio members of this committee anyway.
Well, Kate says, Kate put together a resolution that we passed last time that says it would form an ad hoc committee to review the charter.
Does it limit membership in the resolution?
Doesn't say.
What was the word?
It says Kate's resolution to form an ad hoc committee to review the charter.
It's not on the website yet.
What was the question?
It's an ad hoc committee. By default, the executive committee is members of it, and there needs to be a flexible mechanism for adding additional members if there was need for it. And what was in the resolution was the executive committee can vote to add members to this committee. So I think that's pretty straightforward. And I think Ellis is also correct in pointing out that everybody is an ex officio, that means non-voting member by default. So as long as the committee, I guess what that would mean to me is as far as scheduling the meetings, you have four people whose schedules you need to align right now. I agree it'll get difficult the more people you add to the committee as voting members to find the time they can all come together, but as long as that meeting time is publicized, anybody who's free to go at that time can also attend.
Can we just throw out a time
to see who's free?
I want to just say something about that. Does it make sense to make a time that's next to adjacent to the time when the executive board meets anyhow for this week? And then say the next hour or the next 2 hours, if you guys have that time to do
it. They haven't done it yet, have
they? It's been 9 a.m. Usually on off weeks of meetings.
Usually, generally the Wednesday, was it Wednesday or Thursday before? Wednesday before.
So could you set that time for the other Wednesday or every other Wednesday at that same time for this meeting, and then everybody will, then we know you're available and then other people may be available.
When we get our next meeting, we can just send out the entire UA that served.
Right. Next Wednesday is the 25th. That's the day before Thanksgiving. The week thereafter, Wednesday, we have a UA meeting at 4:30. If you'd like, you could meet at 9 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday the 2nd, and we could have our first charter review meeting shortly thereafter. Does that sound good to you guys? That's the day of the UA meeting.
At 9 a.m. you said?
9 a.m. on the 2nd, Wednesday. Wednesday the 2nd. No, that's when they're meeting. I mean, we meet at 10, I guess, or whatever. I don't know how long your meetings are.
Generally an hour.
Okay. So what do you want to do? Ed?
I'm making sure I'm free. Yeah, I do. We'll do that.
All we don't know is Charlie.
Okay. So 10 we o'clock.
Can, I can send him an email.
On Wednesday the 2nd.
You said you meet from 9 to 10?
But we're going to meet...
Yeah, no, if we're not,
if we're meeting that... If we have a UA meeting that night,
yeah,
we need to meet the Wednesday before.
Which is Wednesday before Thanksgiving. Are you going to be able to do that? 9 a.m. on Wednesday the 25th?
Are you around, Ed?
I'll be around.
Isn't Wednesday now an official day off from...
Only at 1:10.
Oh, it's 1:10, half day. Okay, no problem.
1:10 or 1:15?
I'm there.
But it's two.
Are you going to be here Monday? Huh?
Yeah.
You are? All right.
Are you guys gone?
We have our iPads.
Well, I mean, the executive may have to decide something.
So he, although he's recommending that, have you agreed to this? He's just recommending. Have you two agreed to this?
We need to meet next week for the executive committee to set the schedule for the December 2nd meeting.
My question is, have you agreed to what he's recommended? That's my question.
We don't know if Charlie's available for that.
At 9 o'clock on Wednesday, the 25th, we don't know. I don't know.
All right. How about I communicate with Charlie, make sure he's available for our executive committee. I will make the suggestion that we want to start the
charter review
committee right after that for an hour.
And
we'll put it to the mail list.
And what time is right after that?
10.
10. 10 to 11, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. That's all I was asking.
In that case, I'd be willing to have a caucus meeting with anyone who's going to work on it and make suggestions this weekend or at some time.
You could set it up by email.
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Next on the agenda is the latest added item of Marty's.
I have copies of this. We can pass it around.
Yeah, it's Wednesday morning. The 2nd,
yeah.
Or the 25th?
No, the 25th.
If I'm looking at Oracle, Charlie's schedule looks pretty.
Okay. Sure. I'll send him an email when we get done with this meeting.
Oh, thanks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good job.
So, Rodney, you'll
Thank
confirm
you.
It with him.
I will confirm it with him.
If you want one. This resolution is going to be, I hope, in this form, you notice it's a draft resolution for right now, and the Sustainability Committee will be looking at it Friday, at its meeting at noon, and it will be the University Assemblies to act upon.
I don't see
anything from today.
You're not expecting us to vote, or
no? I'm not. I just want to have comments, and I put it in front of you because I know when the Senate considered a resolution like ours, Bill Eden is the basic author of this with from Kyoto Now, and he's on the Sustainability Committee. And I did some editing of it, so you could consider it coming from both of us to you at this point. But it'll be, as I said, further worked on by the Sustainability Committee. And I brought it to your attention today because when the Senate considered a resolution at its meeting last month, or earlier this month, I guess, senators all said, well, this is a lot of information and we don't really know how to evaluate it because we have to look up this or look up that. And so they tabled it, and I expect that one will come back to the Senate at perhaps its next meeting, as early as its next meeting. But one of the things I wanted to make possible for this body was for you to look at and do whatever research you find necessary to evaluate it so that we wouldn't have the same situation when it's considered on December 2nd. So if there are any questions about it right now, I'm happy to entertain them.
I'd like to say one point that was brought up to me is that you acknowledge that there are benefits associated with this, but the whereases are all very negative. If you're looking to establish a committee to...
Well, the first whereas is not negative. Cornell is committed to environmentally sustainable practices. That's not negative.
Well, negative,
including the sustainable extraction and development of natural resources, which includes a positive statement.
Well, there's subsequently a number of them. Chairman, only question. I was actually the constituent that communicated with Ed. My name is Michael Gavinson. I'm the president of the Griffin Professional Student Assembly. I came to this meeting in my capacity as a graduate student in natural resources. My concern with the resolution is that we are looking at these folks, and they therefore resolve, is looking at creating a task force, or the UA, looking at creating a task force to investigate potential risks and benefits associated with leasing of the Cornell land. And so it's the risks and benefits associated with leasing the land. It seems to me that everything that's listed in the resolution is referring to risks that are potentially associated with the leasing of the land, not the potential benefits. I think it creates a precarious situation in which you're saying we want a task force to look at the risks and benefits, but it already seems that we've made up our mind in favor of thinking that there are more risks and benefits. And as you know, I've had a lot of conversations on this because I am a natural resource. My advisor actually is working on a grant on this right now, and I have another advisor who's been in the Department of Natural Resources for over 30 years, who's personally leasing a plant. So it's for exploration. And so I think that while the balance may weigh in favor of saying that there are too many risks that the Department should lease a plant, I think that there are some benefits. They have acknowledged in the need, therefore be resolved, but not acknowledged.
So what would you suggest are the benefits that should be included? I think, I mean, in the first whereas of the Senate resolution, it says the estimated geological rock bed known as Marcellus Shale may contain up to several trillion cubic feet of natural gas, dramatic increases in the price of crude oil, and the corresponding need to reduce our nation's dependence on foreign oil has resulted in a tremendous increase in interest in activity related to natural gas exploration. Well, that's sort of, applies the benefit. If you'd like people us to say that that natural gas is a resource that bears what would you like? How would you frame a possible benefit?
Jobs.
There's money.
I don't think that's a reasonable. Thing to say, unless you can prove it. There's no proven. The statistics show that there's no proven significant amounts of jobs that come to Southern Tier employees. There are certainly a number of employees with certain skills in drilling who will come to the Southern Tier, but wildcatters. The number of jobs is supposed to be 0.7. jobs a year, 0.7, so that's one job, or one seven-tenths of a job for a major drilling site. But anything else, I can put it down. The problem is that there have been studies of this. It's been, done by the DEC that was briefing us at the last meeting. What benefits would you like us to put in?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know how you...
Go ahead.
I don't think to be an expert on this issue. I know some people who are experts that I'd be happy to store them and report back to you to see if I can get some good wording if I receive you on this matter. I just thought it was an incongruency between saying potential risk and benefit in the VA for itself. I think that see where a statement will reflect taking a bit more solid, let's say, investigative sanctions.
Ah, very good. Okay, so your suggestion is, and I'll bring it to the committee, that we X out and benefits. Very good.
One or two suggestions, either X out and benefits, or is, or to keep in benefits and add benefits if you believe you are. One of those two. I think some people have identified possible benefits, but I don't see them.
Randy, did you want?
I want to say that if the water in Ithaca became polluted this by chance, then...
You mean more?
Then there's like no reason for Ithaca to be here. That Ithaca is really a very aquatic city in terms of gorges and lakes and all that. So I think actually affecting the water is very, very important. But I also agree that we should keep the benefits here, because any real decision weighs the benefits of this. And I'm not an expert, but I guess the benefits of natural gas over foreign oil, from coal, is that it's cleaner. Whether that weighs something in the favor of drilling is a completely different, but it is a benefit, I think. And for the families that make money from selling the drilling rights, that's a benefit. But whether those I would guess just offhand those benefits are outweighed by the risks of drilling. But I still think they're benefits and they have to be weighed. And to give a report that just says here's the bad, there's always bad things. But to give a report that says the bad things, or give a report that just says the good things, frankly, I don't like listening to those things. But if somebody weighs the two sides and says, we weighed the two sides and this is where we come down, then I think the report has more value. And the other thing that's in the report, but I honestly like it in better words, is there's so many people like a natural resources or geology or sociology and economics that really have some kind of expertise that probably everybody on campus will be, they have some expertise to add to this. And it would be really nice if this is a terrible way of drilling, to have a report that's scientifically sound to give out, to say Cornell did this. This is a Cornell report that says find a better way to drill, or this way of drilling is good, you get it wrong.
Phil wants to speak.
Okay, cool. I really hear your concerns, and I didn't really think about that when we were drafting it up. I would have no problem adding a whereas, you know, the university stands to gain economic profit, and whereas leasing has potential benefits in the net climate emissions of the university or something like that. I'd be more than happy to do that and send it back to you guys.
Actually, I have a question about that, if you're willing, but you can choose somebody else to go. Who's first?
I have John, and then Leon, and then Andrew, and then Marty.
You missed Elizabeth. And she was talking when I was on mine.
Okay.
John.
Okay. I just wanted to say that I think it certainly is important that the committee that this resolution would establish to fully weigh all the benefits and all the potential problems. But I don't feel it's as imperative that all these whereases, which are purely just for factory, in this resolution to create a committee necessarily spell out these are all the benefits. The whole purpose of creating the committee is to explore the potential problems and potential benefits. All this resolution that my understanding is reading is that the university is looking into doing something. There are all these problems that concern us, and we would like these problems to be weighed against any potential benefits that the university sees before going forward. And so to spell out any, these are the benefits, these are the problems, I feel unnecessary, and that's kind of putting the cart before the horse, that this is what the committee is supposed to do. We're not, and then there's also the problem, too, that when you do that, well, are they only going to limit themselves to these benefits and these problems? I feel that the committee should just take a very broad-ranging approach, and it should explore for itself all of the benefits and all the problems.
Elizabeth.
Am I the only one who was at the Senate meeting last week?
I was.
You were, good. So we saw a PowerPoint presentation by a substantial group of scientists, physicists, chemists, biologists, a pretty tiny group of experts who aren't personally interested in leasing their land. And haven't already done that, but are simply looking at the problem of contamination of water supply. Just a very large list of carcinogens are mixed with sand and a very large amount of water that was previously clean and injected into these wells. The sand holds the fractures open, and then the gas comes up and they collect it. And then the water comes up again with all the carcinogens and the radon and so on that is dissolved. And then what do you do with that? Right now, some of it's being dumped in the Cayuga Heights water supply reservoir, where the city of Ithaca has forbidden it. I'm really surprised that Ithaca Heights have already allowed this. But
no, it's done now. They just
canceled it. Good, because it's hard to see how that was in the region. But I mean, you're talking about some very serious, perhaps irremediable environmental damage that would severely change the quality of life and subject just about every resident in this area has some very serious environmental consequences. One of the chemists who's been working on this has not leased his land, but everybody else around him has. And once 60% of the people around you have entered into leases, you're going to be dead. You're going to suffer all the disadvantages without making the money. They drill under your land. There are real dangers. I just gave you a study of the leakages from the gas. They can come up into your house and kill your whole family. This has actually happened. And so obviously you're getting no benefit there, but you're suffering the consequences. This chemist who is sitting behind me is talking to me, so that he goes out every morning and tests his well water to see if it's drinkable, and most of the time it's not, and so he's already feeling the consequences of this. I mean, we can talk about balancing benefits and costs here, but when the costs are this serious to the health and safety of the area, I don't see why we have to work really hard to look for benefits when the cost is just really disastrous. Plus, most of this gas, as I understood from what they said last time, it's for export. It's not to use here in Canada. It's going to be exported to other places. So where's the benefit there for us? So any price we pay for natural gas is going to be at the market price. This is not going to be our only special source of gas unless they're able to write something like that in those contracts. It's just, we kind of use it as a movie. But I hope everybody will look at that PowerPoint that has been prepared by some very impressive experts on this campus who are meeting again tomorrow morning to come up with to modify the resolution that was presented there. And it might be useful, Marty. The reason I sent you those there, before you can get the notes too, that I just got today, was because there might be some benefit in making the two resolutions parallel. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe it's fine to get them from different groups that are worded slightly differently. But they, you know, for the short-term benefit, this is kind of the same thing, for the short-term benefit to the people who lease, I mean, that's the main beneficiary, right, and to Cornell that gets some money for our financial crisis. But for that, for 10 years of useful life of doing this in these reservoirs, you could have environmental damage that lasts a lifetime, and that interferes with tourism and safety and health. And who would want to come here? As people were saying, and I think they're going to put this in the resolution tomorrow morning, that what attracts people to this little isolated place right now is the natural beauty of the land. And a lot of the science faculty were saying, and have been saying in this conversation, that if it weren't for that attraction, they wouldn't be here. So that's another sort of intangible but maybe very tangible disadvantage to this university. If we poison the air and the land and the water around here for 10 years of lease revenue to the university's general fund to make up for the buildings, that just really doesn't make sense in terms of the long-term well-being of the university. But I hope everybody will get to look at that PowerPoint we were talking about in the Senate. And the dean of faculty said he thought we could put it up on the website. I didn't know that, all that horrible stuff, until I saw the PowerPoint and heard the presentation by university scientists. But it certainly can change the way you look at that.
you send that on the other system?
The PowerPoint? Linda Nicholson is the person in the microbiology who did the presentation, and I just asked her whether I have time to get her answer today, whether she's willing to release the PowerPoint just to wade into the discussion, because everything in it, I think, was factual. They had pictures of what the landscape looked like the 40-acre cleared mountaintop removed pads for drilling.
If you can forward that to us, that would be great. Leah?
I'm going to be very brief. What it is that I think Cornell has a lot of engaged and knowledgeable faculty, staff, grad students, but they also have alumni who also probably would be some of those alumni experts in this field. So I would just suggest that you consider adding perhaps some alums to this committee or whatever.
This resolution did have
alumni. This one does?
It does not.
Andrew?
I think there must be some more nuance in the debate about whether or not to drill in a certain area. There have to be questions involved in the level of certain chemicals being used, things that none of us in this room are experts in. I also think that there already is a committee filled with experts in natural resources, and we have talked about that too, the campus planning committee. Filled with experts in this particular field. And I think rather than creating a new committee, perhaps contacting the chair of that committee to see what they've been looking at in terms of land use and drilling. And furthermore, I'm pretty sure that the governor, Governor Patterson, is about to make a decision with regard to environmental regulation, specifically this issue, drilling in New York State for gas. And I'm sure that certain regulations are being drafted right now in the state assembly.
I want to clarify two matters for you. First, the planning committee is the campus planning committee, and they don't deal with anything beyond the campus, and so they will not, unless there's
a drill plan.
No, it's just campus planning. It doesn't even go out beyond that. And so unless there's a drill pad set up on, lot B, they won't. Second, Governor Patterson is waiting for the D-Geist, which is now being considered, and his authorization actually will not come until the D-Geist is passed. And this resolution doesn't talk about the process which is going on now in the governmental circles, because it's not a resolution which is designed to have us enter into political matters. It's something having to do with only Cornell's resources. There are other things to say in regard to this, but let's have more discussion.
Nighthawk?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate Professor Stamets, correct?
Yes.
I appreciate Professor Stamets' point, but the point that I was trying to make, and I guess the sponsor very much acknowledged, is that if we're going to make a task force to look at risk benefits, we need to discuss risk benefits. It seems to me that Professor Sanders would agree that the task force is not even necessary, because from her comments, what it seems to me she was saying is that she believes there's many negative things associated with it, and they outweigh any possible positive influence. And so, if that's the decision that this body was to make, then you wouldn't even need a task force, because you would have already made that decision. And so, I think the task force would be valuable, and I think the gentleman can go now and actually go on in a good direction with putting out this task force. But if you were to determine that that is completely negative things that are associated with this, and it's obviously going that way to positive, I wonder why and what the task force being created.
Okay.
So I agree that I think that it's good to examine this issue. It should be this conversation, but if people really know something about it. And I also agree with the gentleman. I mean, what we're looking at here is a resolution to establish a task force that we don't need to put the cart before the horse. That, I think Nighthawk's point was that this needs to be putting the cart before the horse because it lays out several negative points. But, maybe the solution is acknowledging there are benefits and there are downsides, and this task force job is to analyze that with experts. And that's something that I think is important. And that's not us making a decision on if this is good or bad idea, that's saying, hey, we're making decisions to put a
task force together. And I think that's where you're going, and I think that's like a good thing. So that would be my comment. Bring us back to the next UA meeting. Maybe it's simple, but acknowledges that there are topics.
So yeah, I'd be more than happy to add some positives, to add faculty, to add alumni. One component of this debate that I think has been missing is it's not just about getting experts together, but it's also about making it a transparent process. Because certainly you can get experts together from the Water Resource Center at Cornell, and they would have one opinion. Or, you know, the chairman of the Board of Trustees used to run a natural gas company. He has a very different perspective. So what we want to do is we want to bring all those voices together and make it transparent, not have a bunch of people who know a lot about it go into a closed door room and write a report up. And that's why we want to have students and faculty and staff on it. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Did you? Were you?
No.
Jason?
It seems like there's already committees and groups of people that are analyzing what the risks and benefits associated with it, and it looks to me like all that this would do would require that this committee release a statement telling the Cornell community what's going on before any action was taken. And I don't see how that could be a bad thing. I mean, this isn't really needed to make the decision, because this doesn't even say they would have any deciding power. It just says that they would notify the Cornell community.
Because the president decides. It's an executive decision.
Right. So right. They would just recommend something to the president. And it would be
required that the entire Cornell community was notified.
Right.
Randy. The gorges around Cornell and the lakes are of inestimable beauty and worth. The first thing. And then the next thing is there's benefits and risks to extracting the gas. We want to weigh those to make sure we don't forever lose that natural beauty. And therefore, we would like to ask for to weigh those benefits and risks. And I'd like to say one thing. It's been a long time since I read the play Enemy of the People. I can't forget it, but it applies exactly to the situation. If you haven't read it,
what's the name of it again?
Enemy of the People.
Speaking for myself, what I'm really after here is knowing that this is going to be an executive decision to have the same transparency that we have for the task force report, and that is that before a decision is made, we see all of the data that went into the decision. We have a chance to assess it. There are already committees working on it, okay? But that I don't think we need another task force to do something. I think what we need is before a decision is made, okay, in the same way that the task force reports are made available, that everybody has a chance to look at it and say, well, wait a second, you didn't put in here the effect this is going to have on my property value if Cornell makes this decision, and I'm not even on Cornell land. To make sure that the process that was utilized in making the decision is something that everybody has a right to view and put their 2 cents worth. I don't see that another task force is going to raise. If we want to resolve this, you know, before an executive decision is made, you know, a document should be made available to the entire Ithaca community, considering that Cornell is such a giant landowner, indicating how this decision was made. Obviously, all the benefits are economic benefits. No, I'm not going to get healthier if they extract this. No. And things like, what about the carbon dioxide emitted in the process of moving all that gas around by trucks that don't use natural gas because you can't get enough power out of those earth movers? Are all those things taken into account? There are already people working on this at all community levels. What I want to do is be able to go, like I can go to the dean of faculty's office and say, right, before the president's or whoever makes any decision, I can look at this and say, right, these things were taken into account, and I can voice my opinion. And I don't think that a task force can do anything that isn't already being done.
Well, I'm concerned, though, that there's... Yes, I agree with you. Actually, I think that's terrific to put the... I'm not so certain that all these committees around are really going to be a part of the process of the president making the decision.
And that's, if we could have in the resolution, and I don't know all the committee, I know the Water Resource Committee is working on trying to figure something like that out. I know, for example, when I put this before the Sustainability Committee, which is one of the committees that might consider thinking about this, some people who are high up in on the committee, who are high up in environmental issues, were saying, oh, well, we're just waiting for the DEC to issue its report. And that doesn't speak very well for Cornell-centered processes in thinking about this. There may be other committees that you're thinking about are doing all kinds of serious consideration of it. But if they are, they aren't coming out of the woodwork right now and saying, what we're hearing from DEC, from environmental lawyers, from other people who are studying what's going on, is that there are significant risks. And yes, indeed, there are economic benefits for certain people. But we want to see how much, and maybe for Cornell as well, we want to see how much those benefits are weighed against the risks. So I'm happy with what you say, and we could, if you could frame it in a way that...
I have to think about it. I'm just thinking, this is in many ways so similar to what we resolved in terms of the task force reports. Transparency, something that affects us all.
Right.
Just form another committee. I'm much more concerned that the president, in making his decision, takes into account everything, and that people who want to and are knowledgeable have an opportunity to weigh in before those decisions are made. We have town hall meetings now on the task force report. But there's something to work with. In other words, here's what we're going to use to make the decision, right? And in many cases, these decisions seem inevitable. In other cases, they don't. My mind is mushy. I'm not sure that I could make a cogent statement right this minute. But but get another task force to do something.
Well, it'd be great to have.
I don't know.
That's why it's in front of you now. And if as a member of the assembly, you would provide us with your wisdom as an email, then we can reframe.
That I do. Although, as I say, it's. Yeah. I mean, I should tell you that I have fields out in Dryden that I look at. And I should also point out that this kind of issue, we have land up on the St. Lawrence and face this exact same thing for wind power. What are the rules and regulations going to be for putting up windmills? You have every farmer up there just happy as a clam to just sign away, put a windmill. It's better than growing corn. And then they find out that there's roads that have to be built, access, things like that. And for $500 a year, they don't even get the benefit of the power, because as you say, they think, you're just going to plug in right here, right? And I get free power. And no wind generation company will sign anything that says you get any break on your power, in the same way that we would probably see no benefit, except in terms of what it might do for market price for natural gas. But these are really scary. I don't know about you people. I mean, you'll graduate, go off to the Caribbean or something where it may not be a problem. That scares the hell out of me, particularly after sitting through the faculty send. Also, that sheet that was handed out, that word was sent. It's scary. That picture of that area, was it West Virginia? West Virginia, Pennsylvania? That was scary.
So we're in a stall mode.
Anyway.
We're in a stall mode, and I just want to say to you folks, I've understood the comments you've all made, but I haven't yet heard. I'm a little bit thinking about what you mean by benefits, and I'm happy to accommodate benefits, but I think I need some language from you that actually says how the whereas is could be either restructured or otherwise leave out the words benefits.
I think that Randy, at least from my perspective, said it very clear. I liked what he was proposing as a resolution. So I would go along with Randy's suggestion. I haven't read any of the people, but his resolution sounded good.
So if you could frame that, Randy, that would be terrific.
So
not right now.
Elizabeth.
I never liked the idea of just willy-nilly being pessimistic. In this case, though, there may be a lot of groups working on it from very different angles. And I think the value of having a one university-wide task force that is open, transparent, I hope you looked at that, and that the report will be made public and there will be a chance to debate it like we did the code of conduct things, you know, at real town meetings where people who don't agree with the factors put in the equation will have a chance to speak out, and that might need a modification of the reports. Because there's no reason to worry about benefits. The people who benefit in the university, the head of the board of trustees, you know, they're very powerful people who look at the benefits. And it's really not a problem to do that. If we wait, nothing is lost. The gas stays in the ground, and it only becomes more valuable over time. So whatever economic benefit there is to the university is not going to go away. We don't act in the next couple of years. But one thing they pointed out in the discussions after this was back in the Senate, there was a law passed in 2005 at the national level, sponsored by that wonderful public citizen, Dick Cheney, as a part of his, you know, secret, still unrevealed, energy meetings with energy companies to come up with an energy policy. And they finally got this law through in 2005, and it exempts natural gas drilling from most normal, from EPA regulations and so on.
Clean Drinking Act and the Clean Air Act.
Exactly. But if we wait a couple of years, they might change the law. And if we wait a little while, the DEC, which is not also known to be a real tiger, especially in this time when the state's so pressed for money, may improve, may come up, there may be better regulations. I remember seeing a special intelligence about the Alaska pipeline and how environmentalists came in and they delayed it a few years. And during the time they delayed it, changes were made in metallurgy and so on. And so the end result was the pipeline was far safer, and the oil is just as valuable or more valuable. By saying we don't want to drill now, we're not saying we'll never drill. The economic benefits will still be there, but it might be possible in the future to get them out without poisoning this vast area.
Cool.
Yeah.
So just to move us forward, I think we've heard a lot of good concerns. There also seems to be at least a budding consensus. Like, we have a general sense of what we want to do. I will speak just for a second to the value of having a task force specifically charged for this. It's kind of to consolidate, because we found doing our research on this that there are, you know, easily dozens of Cornell professors who are researching it. It would be great if we could kind of consolidate that and turn it into one report. And that's what the task force's idea is. And it's also to make sure that President Scorton has to listen to these concerns. Because right now he doesn't have to go to Jeff Tester, he doesn't have to go to, you know, the Water Resource Center. He can make a decision talking to the Board of Trustees. And so an important clause in this resolution is that no decision will be made until this task force issues a report. So just because I feel like we have general consensus on it, I'm going to propose that Marty and I go back and we take a look at it, we incorporate some of these suggestions, and then we bring it, we can even email it out to you guys before next meeting. Okay.
I have Nighthawk, and then I have Randy, and we've got like 3 minutes left of our meeting, and I really don't want to extend it.
All I was going to say is that Marty asked for some recommendations on wording, and I think the gentleman from Theodore Now, when he spoke, and you go back to the audio on the tape, he had posted that earlier, and I think it was.
Yeah, a benefit that's a really funny one, but I'd like to bring it up. The Ellis made me think of it, not my backyard. Is it better to drill here if the overall benefits were cleaner stuff compared to drilling in another community, which would cause more environmental harm and more harm to the people? And I think it's fair to take into consideration as a benefit. Where's the safest place to drill, even if it's where we are? Now, I agree with everything Elizabeth said.
let's not do anything until it's real. There's too much to lose. But I think it's also not flattering to us to say we don't want it and we don't care we get it. And I think it's a benefit for us to consider that.
I'll just point out it didn't work for Yucca Mountain in Nevada, and it won't work here. There'll be lawsuits to the future. But we say, well, we're willing to take it. Like when Pennsylvania was very happy to take our garbage because we didn't want it. You know, and they decided they could make money doing that. You know, personally, to be honest with you, I'm not that benevolent. I say, well, you know, I feel sorry for this orphanage down in Lancaster, so I'll give up my house and my children's safety because I think it's better. You know, I'm not that nice of a person.
No, we all have some level where we're going to give, but I think that's.
I
think we're done discussing things. Thank you very much for your consideration, everybody. I'd be happy to entertain comments by email.
Can I have a second? All in favor?
Aye.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.